Well, some of you have seen my face already, and you're wondering to yourself what happened to him. Was he in a boxing match, or was he teaching Kung Fu to the Marines, or filling in the blank in various ways, heroic ways? I fell down the stairs on Thursday night. I was wearing socks. Don't do that if your stairs aren't carpeted. And I had a good tumble and was taken care of at the Washington Hospital Center with some stitches. So I'm recovering well, and all is well. So no brain damage just yet. Sometimes suffering is noble, and sometimes it's just self-inflicted. So, well, I was also paying attention to the news this week. I don't know if you follow the news. I do. And it was a historic week, was it not? Historic week from the perspective of history. You've got Hosni Mubarak, who was the dictator of Egypt, the ruler of Egypt for 30 years, and he stepped down on Friday. So February 11th, 2011 will definitely go down in history as a significant day for the Middle East. As I listened to the developments over the week, over the past couple of weeks, where he would actually step in and try to mollify the protesters by saying something, by giving them some sort of concession. I'll appoint a vice president, or I'll step down in September. He would just sort of obfuscate and give them a little bit, hoping that they would be really excited and that they would all go home and leave the square and stop protesting. Despite the weight of the world that was literally on his shoulders, calling him to step down, the weight of his own people calling him to step down, he resisted. He was stubborn. And as a pastor, I'm thinking through, what's motivating this guy? What's causing him to be so stubborn? If I had to guess, and this is not a political statement by any means, please don't take it that way. This is simply the musings of a pastor. I'm wondering, what's motivating him? My guess is, well, he's been calling the shots for the last 30 years. Whatever he says goes. So when people are telling him what to do, his natural inclination is to say, no, I'm in control. I will set the terms of my own resignation, thank you. If you want to set the terms of my resignation, I'm going to push back. I'm going to be in control. One man, one dictator, is getting what his heart desires, but what a cost. What a cost it was for him to have that control, to maintain that control. Think of all the man hours that you could add up with all the people in the square, Tahrir Square, protesting that he stepped down. How many man hours, if you added that up and monetized it, would that add up to? Pretty costly. Pretty costly. And this is actually a common theme with dictators. Many people suffer or give something up so that one person can have what they want. Many people suffer so that one person, one dictator, can live as they wish. One dictator gets all the perks, the power, the control, and many people suffer in order to give it to him. Slumlords are also guilty of this pattern. Slumlords enrich themselves off of the poor, but they don't give anything back. They never develop their properties. They never improve them. They only take rent. Slumlords are in many ways, the cause of urban decay. Many people suffer so that slumlords can have what they want. They take their money out of the city and use it for their own wealth and ease. So what causes urban decay? What stands in the way of human flourishing? Slumlords and dictators. Right? They're parasites on our world. Now, we know God cares about our world. He knows he cares about our cities. So how is he going to rescue our cities? Well, that's what we're going to study tonight in Luke 19. God is going to, this is a word of hope. Jesus is going to rescue nations. He rescues nations from their dictators by rescuing dictators from their idolatry. Or if we zoom in just a little bit more, Jesus rescues cities from their slumlords by rescuing the slumlords from their idolatry. Right? Dictators and slumlords. Think about it. If dictators and slumlords no longer worship money, they would stop enriching themselves dishonestly. If dictators and slumlords worshipped and loved Jesus more than power, they would stop oppressing people. When money or sex or power rule the heart of a powerful person, people suffer. Can you disagree? When Jesus rules the heart of a powerful person, justice and peace follow. Jesus rescues cities from their slumlords by rescuing the slumlords from their idolatrous loves. Now, tonight's gospel lesson demonstrates this redemptive pattern. Jesus is on a collision course tonight with a first century version of a slumlord. Let's look at verse 1. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through, and there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. Let's stop there. How did Zacchaeus get rich? He got rich the old-fashioned way. He got rich the same way people with guns get rich. He extorted it. You see, Rome had conquered Israel, had a lot of soldiers, lots of public works expenses to pay those soldiers. And so in order to collect the money from their conquered people, they looked for guys like Zacchaeus, enterprising men like Zacchaeus who would turn on their own people and demand tax money from them. So someone on the inside had to love money enough to sell out his own people. Here's how it worked. Zacchaeus, or one of Zacchaeus' employees, because he's a chief tax collector, they knock on your door. You open the door. Hey, my name's Zacchaeus, and you might remember me. We studied Torah as children together. I live down the street. Here's the thing. It's tax time. You've got some money. You owe taxes. So I'm going to go ahead and ask for half of what you have in liquid assets. Or 60%, or 70%, or 90%, whatever he wants. And you protest. My kids, I'm not living lavishly. I need to feed my children. I need to take care of my family with this money that I've earned. I've worked hard for this money. You can't take 90% of it. Zacchaeus says, well, how do I say this? There's Roman soldiers outside the door, and they would be so disappointed to hear about your wavering loyalty to Rome. So we can do this the easy way, or we can do this the hard way. What's it going to be? Do you want to live to see your kids grow up, or would you just like to exit this world now or lose a couple of limbs? Well, you choose the easy way. And then life goes on, right? And so you make some more money, and you eke out an existence, save a little bit more. Pretty soon, Zacchaeus is at your door again. It's time for some more money. Rome is ready to, these soldiers occupying your land and oppressing you need wages, and you choose the easy way again and again. One of your children dies from malnutrition because you don't have enough to feed them. Meanwhile, your whole family is sleeping on one straw mattress. And at the same time, down the street, Zacchaeus' house is getting more flush with servants. He's having huge parties. He's living high on the hog. The decorations in his homes are incredibly lavish. He's the only one with any kind of luxury. Zacchaeus sold you out to Rome. He sold out, in fact, all of your neighbors, the whole community, all of your family. He's a slumlord. And he worships money. So guess what? A lot of people are going to suffer so that Zacchaeus can have what is heart craves. He wants your money. So where's the justice for Jericho? Where's the justice going to come? How's Jericho going to flourish? Well, Jesus is on his way, and Zacchaeus is going to get what he has coming to him. So on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus marches right through Jericho, and his mission brings him right into the heart of the town that Zacchaeus is oppressing. Now, to our amazement, Zacchaeus doesn't run from Jesus. He's drawn to him. He is looking for him. Zacchaeus wants to see Jesus. Why? Why does he want to see Jesus? What motivates him? The text doesn't say. We don't quite know. But maybe the idol of money wasn't delivering what it promised. Perhaps he wanted out of the life that he had created for himself. Maybe he was already starting to sort of feel trapped in his own version of hell. Isolated, empty, lifeless. Idols can be cruel to their worshipers. They promise deliverance and freedom, but they only enslave. And so maybe Zacchaeus wanted to be rescued. Maybe he wanted to be conquered. Maybe he was just plain tired of oppressing people. Maybe he knew that he himself was oppressed. He was oppressed. He had his own slumlord, and he needed someone to spring him from his own prison. Someone who could deliver him from his own ghetto. So Zacchaeus is looking for Jesus, and he's desperate. The second half of verse 3 says this. He was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was small of stature. Now, Zacchaeus was being boxed out, all right? Imagine you're in the crowd, okay? Zacchaeus has taken bread from your child's mouth and put it into his children's mouth. He's enriched himself with it. You have no sympathy for him whatsoever. Okay? This man is short because he's a bottom feeder. But suddenly, you see this bottom feeder lose all sense of dignity. He starts to run ahead of everybody, which was a shameful act in that culture. And then he begins to climb a tree, which no doubt would have drawn ridicule from everyone around him. Everyone around you laughs as you stand with the crowd, and this wealthy dignitary completely embarrasses himself in front of all of Jericho. Now is the perfect time for Jesus to condemn Zacchaeus. He's going to get him. He's going to get him good. He's going to embarrass him just like he embarrassed that rich young ruler guy. Who is that short, well-dressed man up in the tree? A tax collector? A rich guy? You'll never enter into the kingdom of heaven. You'll never pass through the eye of a needle. Curses on you. I curse you just like I curse the fig tree. How does Jesus respond to this slumlord? Verse 5. He looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus. Now this is surprising. Jesus knows his name. Zacchaeus must have been surprised, a little taken aback. Zacchaeus thought that he was the one looking for Jesus. He thought that he was the seeker. Suddenly he realizes, Jesus is the seeker. He's been looking for me. Zacchaeus, hurry on down now. Come on down. You can almost hear Jesus laughing behind his words with joy. I must stay at your house today. That's why I came to Jericho. It's part of my mission. I've been looking for you. I want to dine with you. Until now, your home has been a house of oppression. Now I want you to use it to welcome me. Zacchaeus, are you weighed down with your money? I've been looking for you. Are you guilty of oppression? I've been seeking you out. Are you ready to be conquered? Because I'm ready to receive you. When he was up there on that sycamore tree, alone, humiliated, ostracized, Jesus seeing straight through him, Zacchaeus knew that he was the worst person in the crowd, which was the perfect setup to receive grace. Jesus singled him out for redemption, and Zacchaeus knew that it had nothing to do with his performance. Zacchaeus encountered grace, and it undid him, and it beckoned him down from the sycamore tree. Verse 6, he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. Now, you've been paying attention this entire time. Remember, you're standing with the crowd. You watch with disdain as Zacchaeus ambles down the tree. And you watch him. He's broken out into a cold sweat. Clearly, something's happened to him. He's visibly moved, perhaps even trembling. And you're trembling, too, out of anger. Your oppressor is getting special interest. Suddenly, you don't like Jesus very much anymore. You just took Jesus out of your good guy column and put him in the bad guy column. Verse 7. When all saw it, they grumbled. He has gone to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. Verse 8, Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, Behold, Lord, behold, Lord. Until now, up until this moment, money had been Lord. But now the slumlord calls Jesus Lord. Do you see what's happened here? Jesus has dethroned Zacchaeus' idolatry. The slumlord has been freed from his false gods. That means that money will no longer be his master. It will take its proper place as servant. Money will now serve Jesus because Jesus is the Lord. Money is no longer Lord. Zacchaeus' money will no longer give the orders. It will receive its orders from the Lord Jesus. And when it does, the city begins to flourish. Look at the second half of verse 8. The half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold. By rescuing the slumlord, Jesus has brought economic justice to Jericho. Isn't that interesting? Suddenly, you receive all of your extortion money back with 300% interest. What are you going to do? You're going to buy some food? Perhaps buy a new bed? Get something nice for your wife if you're smart? Invest in cattle and seed? Good things are going to happen in Jericho. Isn't it wonderful? You see, when Jesus rescued Jericho, he rescued Jericho from its slumlord. And how did he do it? By rescuing its slumlord from the idolatry of money. So what does the story of Zacchaeus mean for Washington, D.C.? How can Jesus bring justice and peace and human flourishing in our city? Well, he's got to deal with all the slumlords in our city. So how's he going to do that? Let me ask you, as you look over the span of your life, what have been your best moments? Or maybe if this is the best time of your life, what are the best moments in your life, of your week? Is it when you've completed all of your obligations for the day and it's time to relax with your favorite show or your favorite drink or your favorite meal? Is it when you finish a project at work and you get the kudos, you get the well done, and you feel just personally effective and strong, like you're making a good impact on the world? Is it when you're enjoying just strong camaraderie with other like-minded people, and you feel welcomed and included? Is it when you check your stocks and all of them are green for the week and your investments are going up? Is it when one of your children do well in school, when they flourish in some way? Is it when you feel comfortable or maybe powerful or maybe when you feel vindicated or maybe when you feel successful or desirable by somebody or euphoric or righteous even, like you're growing? Is it when you feel secure? Is it when you feel in control or in demand or liberated? What are the best moments of your life? And who pays for those moments? Who sponsors them? Who make them happen for you? Who do you have to step on or manipulate or throw under the bus to get what your heart treasures? If I'm not mistaken, you're the slumlord with the idol problem. You're the dictator who won't resign. You're the master of your own micro city. And so am I. We need Jesus to rescue us from our idolatries so the people in our life will be delivered from our oppression. So who lives in your slum? Who has to take it on the chin so that you can have your moment of catharsis? What person in your life gets the cold shoulder because they don't appreciate you enough? What shortcuts of time are you taking with your children so you can advance a little bit more at work? What friendship did you trade in for someone or something more desirable? Are there women or men whose exploitation has fed your cravings? Are there people who suffer financially because of your greed? Is there someone who has to walk on eggshells around you? Do you hold back from confronting another Christian so you can continue to kind of benefit from them in some way? Whose reputation have you destroyed in casual conversation to boost your own ego? Whose offenses do you replay over and over again in your mind so that you can feel righteous in comparison to them? You don't have to have the job title of oppressor to be an oppressor. This happens every day. Just ask your family, ask your spouse, ask your friends, ask your coworkers. What is it like to live in one of my buildings? What is it like to live in one of my apartments? What am I chasing after at your expense? What price have you paid so that I could get what I wanted? If you realize that you've been a slumlord, the solution is not to vow to be good so that you don't feel bad anymore. Remember what our text says. Jesus rescues cities from their landlords, from their slumlords, by rescuing those slumlords from their idolatry. So we need Jesus to march through our lives with this conquest of healing and make things right. Jesus is on a mission of renewal. We've got a choice to make. Will we receive Jesus politely as one of the self-righteous people in the crowd? Or are we going to receive him joyfully up in the sycamore tree, up with the worst of them? Up in the sycamore tree because we've used other people for our own gain. Up in the sycamore tree because we're sick people who need a doctor. Will we receive Jesus politely because we deserve him, or will we receive him joyfully because we know we've been a parasite on human flourishing? The healthy don't need doctors, and the righteous don't need forgiven, and the good landlords don't need to be prosecuted. So if you don't need Jesus, he's not here to rescue you. But if you're sick, if you're an idolater, if you're a slumlord, Jesus is here to rescue you. You see, we've all chosen the good things to become ultimate things. Legitimate desires become our lords, and then they start demanding more than they give. Comfort, security, sex, restitution, human applause, beauty, physical fitness, power, control. If we put our hope in these things and make them gods, they will under-deliver every time. They will drive us to enslave other people, and in doing so, they will enslave us. Idols are a leech on individual well-being, and they are a leech on societal well-being. That is why it's such a deep joy to call Jesus Lord, and really mean it. Jesus exercises lordship over idols and puts them in their proper place. He puts us in our proper place too. When our idols are deconstructed, relationships flourish. When our idols are ruled by the Lord Jesus, cities can flourish. So when will all this take place? When's all this renewal going to happen? Does it happen gradually, kind of in the sweet by and by? Sort of, you know, one day at a time, we'll release our captives. Let me ask you, when do you want justice for your own self? When do you want good education for your kids? When do you want clean drinking water? When do you want a well-functioning judicial system? Do you want that in the sweet by and by? It's not in the sweet by and by. You want justice now. So then, when is a good time for you to release your own captives? Verse 9 gives us a hint. Jesus says, today salvation has come to this house. Salvation comes today. Now is the time for salvation. Now is the time to be conquered. Don't drag your feet. Don't obfuscate. Now is the time for you to resign from being a dictator. Not in September when the elections are held. It's time for it to happen right now. Today is the day of salvation. Now is the time to renounce all forms of oppression, subtle or sinister, because Jesus has been seeking you. He wants to bring salvation to you and to your house and to your office and to your neighborhood and your city. He wants to dine with you tonight. He wants to celebrate your freedom. Life is brutally short, so we can't waste a moment in this. You and I have a shot, a short time, a window of time, to release the captives, to experience relational renewal in our own micro cities. I encourage you to do this week. Maybe you say to your spouse, listen, I've held a grudge against you, and I need to ask forgiveness because I've made restitution and justice more important than you. Or I've made relaxation time so important that I've growled at you for interrupting me. Or maybe you say to your friend, hey, listen, I've sacrificed our relationship for something less worthy. Or to your children, listen, I've stolen time from you in order to get ahead at work, and I need you to forgive me. Or maybe you say to one of your coworkers, I've upbraided you. I was wrong. My heart was desiring vindication. I wasn't thinking about you. I was thinking about myself. Or maybe your boss or client, listen, I've cut corners and it's time to make it right. Take it out of my paycheck. Or maybe you say to your triad or your res group or the people from res that you hang out with, hey, look, I valued you for your friendship and I've used you for your friendship, but I've never served with you. I've never given up of my free time to serve with you. It's time to set your captives free. Who lives in your slum? It's time to be set free of the idols that rule over your life as well. And there's only one person who can make that happen. It's the Son of Man, the Lord. He came to seek and save the dictators. He came to set the slumlords free. Let's pray.